a brief biography by Nigel there. I currently work at the National Addiction Centre, which is located at the Institute of Psychiatry, which is part of King's College in the University of London. And also the volunteers that I recruit to studies, along with the consultant psychiatrist I work with, are in what's called the Acute Assessment Unit, which is part of a large psychiatric hospital within the South London Maudsley NHS Trust in Camberwell in South East London. I've taught in universities, four different universities in England and the Irish Republic, and my main interest there has been in psychopharmacology, which is the effects of drugs on behaviour. So what I want to do to tell you today is to raise probably more questions than I'm going to give answers to on engineering behaviour through drugs and altering the genome by looking at targets for a number of psychotropic drugs. They are drugs that affect behaviour and are a group of drugs that are used in psychiatry. Two titles from the covers of New Scientist, which is a weekly popular scientific periodical in the United Kingdom. I don't know if it gets to the US and Canada. Sort of raising issues. One of them from now over 30 years ago, Happy Forever, Can Drugs Create a New Personality? That was brandished all over the cover of this particular issue of New Scientist all those years ago. And the article that was written by David Concar, popular writer in science at the time anyway, was entitled Design Your Own Personality. And more recently, last May, New Scientist also had a special edition, and on the cover of this was the title Better Than Human, Why Settle for What You Were Born? And obviously between those two issues of this magazine, developments in both what I'm going to talk about, lifestyle drugs, and also pharmacogenomics, have moved on considerably. Right. Just a current look on the internet, and one particular website, this biopsychiatry.com, you can find details of 61 online pharmacies promising, paying the right money, all sorts of drugs that, in this country at least, would only be available on prescription. Many of those would be characterised as lifestyle drugs, and I'll come on to say what they are in a moment. The textbook that we use, at least in UK universities, the major textbook, Rang and Dale's Pharmacology, went into its sixth edition in 2007, and for the first time, there was a whole chapter devoted to lifestyle drugs. So it's obviously becoming a big thing in academic circles and with students. And companies like Applied Pharmacogenomics offer behavioural genotype, and I'm going to mention the three particular genes later on. And you can send off, although they don't actually say it's, you can't get your relatives typed, but it's meant to be through laboratories. But companies like that offer genotyping in the particular genes I'll talk about. A couple of quotations now. Brave New World, Aldous Huxley wrote this in 1932, and he described, I suppose, what was the first lifestyle drug called Soma, and with a quotation there, blissful oblivion and perfect contentment with life. Huxley described London in 2540. Two quotes from the books. All the advantages, this first one of course is relevant to us, all the advantages of Christianity and alcohol, none of their defects. And conversation between two people, you look glum, what you need is a gram of Soma. Huxley wrote about a dystopic future where people were, and talk about genetic engineering then obviously, bred, if you like, to their particular positions in life, from alpha to epsilon. And that's where they remained. And people were controlled by this drug Soma. And this was raised in the US President's Council on Bioethics that was published in 2003. In the chapter called Happy Souls, the council wrote this: the example of Soma, the drug in Aldous Huxley's fictional Brave New World, illustrates the debased value of a spurious drug-induced contentment. Soma, like cocaine, only without side effects or addiction, completely severs feeling from living, inner sensation from all external relations, the feeling of happiness from leading a good life. Rendered impotent in their aspirations, the denizens of Huxley's dystopia do not loathe their condition and do not yearn for another, largely because they cannot loathe and cannot yearn. They imagine themselves to be happy as they are, and thus never pursue a life that will be more fully human, with the ups and downs that come from having aspirations self-consciously chosen and ardently pursued. A bit more recent than Aldous Huxley, I don't know how many people have seen the film Gattaca, which you would recognise as a short sequence of nucleotides there, written and directed by Andrew Niccol. And the tagline that came with this film is, "There is no gene for the human spirit." So this was a film, unlike Huxley's book, film of the book, for the genetic age. And the Gattaca Corporation determined people's status in life by exploiting genetic determinism. And they had what were called ballots, without going into the details of the film at the time. These were designer children, designer genomes, and they were selected for what was the feature of the film, spaceflight. And the invalids, not invalids, were what were called faith births, or god children. The film features on one particular invalid who tried to get into the valid category by taking the genetic barcode of one of the others. Well, recreational drugs, as I said in the abstract, I'll quickly put these up, have been around for many thousands of years, or I should say lifestyle drugs. The particular group of drugs that have been around for thousands of years are what are called recreational social drugs, and broadly speaking, you can divide those into four categories: analgesics, with their alternative names. The recreational drugs are not of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory group. They're opioids, as they should be called now, or opiates or painkillers. CNS depressants, the sedative hypnotics, tranquilizers, commonly referred to as downers. Drugs like the benzodiazepines, characterized, I suppose, by the most best-selling, which were, or best-selling rather, diazepam or Valium, as it's probably better known. CNS stimulants, which would include drugs like the amphetamine family. And finally, hallucinogens or psychotomimetics, so the slightly old-fashioned dated term, psychedelics, you still see, such as LSD. So they were, I suppose, what we thought of as lifestyle drugs. But I don't want to talk about these. I want to talk about what pharmacologists and the medical profession talk about today when they mean lifestyle drugs. This is obviously a send-up of Prozac. Prozac is a trade name. Fluoxetine, its generic name, has long since gone out of patent. It's been around, at least in this country, for 22 years now. But it's probably best known as Prozac. There was even a nightclub at one stage in London called Prozac. It became, if you like, a cultural icon. This is a send-up advertisement. But if you look in journals like the British Journal of Psychiatry, you see adverts, not like this exactly, showing adverts for psychotropic drugs, particularly aimed at women, showing women sort of not quite putting a smile on their face, looking downtrodden in one picture, harassed, and then after a particular drug, the situation improves. But Prozac was probably the first of what we come to know as lifestyle drugs or medicines. So what is a lifestyle drug or medicine? Well, surprisingly, it's very hard to define, and there are at least 20 different definitions in the literature. One of them is drugs used to treat conditions on the border between the medical and social definitions of health. In other words, the socially constructed boundary between lifestyle wishes and health needs. A lifestyle becomes a health problem when a biomedical cause or treatment is found to the problem, it becomes medicalized. drugs used to treat diseases associated with a person's lifestyle. Now, to say in a moment, give you some examples of all of these. Drugs approved for a specific clinical condition but used for other purposes. And Prozac, fluoxetine, would be a good example of that. Drugs used to alter our appearance, physical and mental capabilities, or our personality. And again, certainly in this bit, personality, Prozac would fit into that. And those are just the references. Right, here are some examples of lifestyle drugs and their clinical indications on the right. Sildenafil is probably better known as Viagra, but because the trade names differ between either side of the Atlantic, I've used the generic names. Sildenafil, male erectile dysfunction. Lovastatin was the first of a group of drugs that are widely used in the UK to lower cholesterol. So they're used in coronary heart disease. Finasteride, its clinical indication is prostatic hyperplasia, benign prostatic hyperplasia, but it has an interesting effect of increased hair growth. So it's used to treat male pattern baldness, and we could debate whether that's a lifestyle issue. Similarly with minoxidil, an antihypertensive drug that's used to treat male pattern baldness. Somatotropin, growth hormone, is used to treat growth deficiency, and for the available of recombinant human somatotropin, there's a demand for this chemical to be used more widely. In the days when there was concern about passing on Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease by using pituitary glands, extracting somatotropin from pituitary glands from cows, then its use dropped off considerably. Orlistat, obesity, botulinum toxin that needs no introduction, is used to treat facial spasticity, facial twitches in cerebral palsy. Nandrolone, of course, the anabolic steroid, used to treat protein deficiency. And again, you could argue estrogens or estrogens, as we used to say, with or without progestins, used in contraceptive pill. But I'm, as I said, interested in the behavioural side, and the major drugs here, central nervous system drugs, are fluoxetine, its clinical indication is depression, methylphenidate, which is probably better known as Ritalin, in attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. People use it as a lifestyle drug to improve concentration and also alertness. Rimonabant, which is a recently introduced anorectic agent, it's an antagonist or a blocker of the cannabinoid 1 receptor. As people may know, one of the effects of cannabis is it increases your desire to eat, the so-called munchies. And the French company developed an antagonist that blocks the cannabinoid receptor. These two drugs are used in smoking cessation therapy, and modafinil in narcolepsy, this condition where you uncontrollably fall asleep. And that is actually used again by people who want to keep awake and maintain vigilance. Some of these drugs are in amongst the best-selling drugs in the world. The statins, which inhibit an enzyme involved in cholesterol biosynthesis right at the start of the pathway, $8.6 billion worldwide in 2002. Omeprazole, which is used to treat ulcers, so-called proton pump inhibitor, is number three in the list. Then we've got three of these Prozac-like drugs, or selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, paroxetine, sertraline, which are newer clones, and fluoxetine itself. Well, if I just put these up. In terms of genetic targets, the three I just want to focus on here are the 5-hydroxytryptamine or serotonin transporter that moves the neurotransmitter serotonin back into the neuron after it's been released. It removes it from the synaptic cleft. One of the dopamine receptors, the D4 receptor, which is coupled to an inhibitory G protein, and monoamine oxidase, which is the major enzyme that catabolizes the neurotransmitters 5-HT and noradrenaline, or as we say in North America, norepinephrine. I just took this heading off a paper that's published 4 years ago to show you the sort of thing that's going on with these particular genes. Relation of shyness in grade school children to the genotype for the long form of the serotonin transporter, promoter region polymorphism. I must stress these aren't mutations, they are polymorphisms, and an awful lot of research has been published. And just a brief summary, there are associations between a particular polymorphism, the so-called 14-repeat polymorphism of the 5-HT transporter, and increased depression, suicide, and stress. The dopamine D4 receptor, a particular polymorphism, where a sequence of 48 base pairs is repeated, and this is associated with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, novelty seeking, which we associate with drug seeking behaviour, increase in drinking and smoking, and finally, monoamine oxidase A, this particular polymorphism, the 3-repeat, is associated with antisocial behaviour, ASB, autism, and alcohol dependence syndrome. Now, lots and lots of papers have been published recently, and some of them find positive associations, quite weak correlations, others don't. But it's the implications. And this is what, with these quotes, I want to really put out to you. First of all, from Rod Flower, who's a professor of pharmacology at Queen Mary College and University of London. Surely the ultimate lifestyle drug was Soma, a substance elevated to almost sacramental status. With the era of lifestyle drugs now seemingly well established, Huxley's vision, I like this term he uses, of Pax Pharmacologia no longer seems fantastic or remote. Then Simon Young, who's at McGill University in Montreal, increasing signs that more effective and less toxic lifestyle drugs will be developed long before there is broad agreement to enable rational and consistent regulation of them. I won't read it all out because of the time, but the ethical implications of this, as he said, I know it's 3 or 4 years, it's published 3 or 4 years ago, are lagging behind other areas of bioethics. And Francis Fukuyama, who's probably better known for his earlier book, The End of History, in his chapter on neuropharmacology, writes this: we don't have to await the arrival of human genetic engineering to foresee a time when we will be able to enhance intelligence, memory, emotional sensitivity, and sexuality, as well as reduce aggressiveness and manipulate behaviour in a host of ways. And this is from one of these websites, you know, so many websites on drugs, Headweb, the Responsible Parent's Guide to Healthy Mood Boosters for the Family. I don't know if I can take that too seriously, but did raise interesting questions. And again, you know, do if you want copies of these, I'm happy to send them to you. But a rather sinister thing about lifestyle drugs. This is a quote I actually heard at a meeting of Christians in Science in December by, what's his name now, from the Scottish Council on Human Bioethics. But this apparently was quoted in the Scotsman in an article. Joseph Stalin, back in 1926, sent his top scientist on a project to develop an invincible human being insensitive to pain, resistant, and indifferent about the quality of food, so he could have an army. And what he was doing was trying to essentially create a chimera between a chimpanzee and a human being, a humanzee. And this, for me, you know, it's a bit like something out of Star Wars, an army of clones. But what's more worrying, that's now history, and obviously hopefully a long, long way off, was this piece. CX-177 is a drug that keeps you awake, basically. It's a stimulant that's under development, so it's got no generic name. But here's a quote: to create a new metabolically dominant warfighter of the future, able to go 7 days without sleep. I don't know why they stopped at 7 days, but that was so frighteningly and Right, finally, the future for... With the right new genes and designer drugs, there's no reason why mature post-Darwinian life shouldn't get better and better. And the quote which I had in the abstract, the use of combined use of pharmacogenomic manipulation and Prozac, would renorm happiness. And I end, with really some questions. Lifestyle drugs are a distraction from other treatments. Large pharmaceutical companies, their research and development programs become skewed to developing these drugs. Who pays for them? Will you get the situation where only the rich can pay for them and you get increasing polarization? Or will they be available to everyone and you get homogenization of the population? Loss of individuality and uniqueness. There's a normal distribution of behavior in the population. Take this fairly recent and ever-increasing psychiatric condition, social phobia or social anxiety. Is that just at one end of the normal distribution? People who were previously said they were a bit shy, should they be treated? Quick fix solution. Some of these drugs, particularly the Prozac family, have become the diazepam of the new century, changing our minds, not our lives. And something that followed on from earlier plenary sessions, do we blame genetic determinism, our chemicals? What are the theological implications of blaming these two neurotransmitters, serotonin and dopamine, on our behaviour? So thank you. Thank you.
Well, we have exactly 5 minutes for some questions. Please keep them short. Please begin by saying your name and your institutional connection so we know who you are. Who would like to begin?
Dennis Alexander from the Faraday Institute. I'm interested to know what you think about whether pharmaceutical companies, to what degree are they really trying to generate a medicalization of society by actually pinning these sort of labels on people so they can get the drugs to sell to them? I mean, do you think that's a rather sort of Machiavellian view of pharmaceutical companies? I mean, to what degree do you see that happening?
Yes, I mean, I should have a declaration of interest. I have no interest in pharmaceutical companies. No funding from them, but I think there is a lot of truth in that. Without, you know, the dangers, you can have the sledgehammer approach and say everything pharmaceutical companies do. But there certainly is just looking at those big selling drugs. I've heard cardiologists, cardiac surgeons, saying statins should almost be put in the water, which is rather frightening. You know, the idea of particularly the social phobias. The whole area, again, I mentioned in the abstract of cosmetic psychopharmacology, just because someone's maybe not quite as happy as they're as lucky as the next person, should they be given these drugs? So I think there is all the drug development are in these areas, impotency, dieting, smoking cessation is a big thing. One of those drugs has just been released in this country, and also some of these so-called psychiatric conditions. A lot of psychiatrists would say that these are genuine conditions and they should be treated.
Somebody else.
Yeah. Hodges, retired. Could you say something about the way in which there is any governmental regulation on the production of drugs before they hit the market? I mean, to what extent do regulators accept the pharmaceutical company's own tests or require independent tests?
There is strict regulation. I mean, I can only talk about this country. There is strict regulation. I mean, you have to apply to the highest level, the health ministers of the various 4 countries of the United Kingdom, for clinical trial certificates. So that's even before they get anywhere near the market. Because the clinical trial, which is divided into 4 phases, broadly speaking, the clinical trial, this is where most drugs would probably fall. And also it's the most expensive part. Now, if the drug is showing no potential, this is all based on animal studies, preclinical studies, no potential improvement on other drugs, or there isn't enough data, then you wouldn't be granted that. There are exceptions with very severe, potentially life-threatening conditions where you can get clinical trial exemption certificates. But once they get through that, presumably everything shows up. And again, there have been falsification of data, and there have been a number of problems with that. But even if the drug makes it to market, there's then what's called the yellow card reporting. You literally fill in the doctor's bills and the yellow card. It's collected by the regulatory authority, the MHRA, and they accumulate all this data, and if there's a pattern, the drug can then be withdrawn. So even if it's marketed, there is still, obviously, regulation.
Now, what's the question? Was that the question? Or was it whether there's any review of whether the medicalization of this condition is an appropriate thing for which to produce?
Yes, that, and also the independence of the test on which the permission is granted for marketing.
The independence of the tests?
Well, yes, one suspects that sometimes governments set up panels to review data, and on the panels are people who are either connected with or were connected with the companies because they have the expertise.
Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah. And a lot of companies contract out because it is so expensive. Well, the toxicological side plus the clinical side. Very few. Probably even the largest companies in this country contract out their work, both clinical and pre-clinical.
Okay, good. Fine. Next one. Yeah.
Bill Cheshire, Mayo Clinic. As you presented the numbers, so the sheer numbers of people taking some of these drugs, I wondered if there might be a proportion of the population beyond which, if a lot of people are taking drugs that reduce the unpleasantness and pain of life, is it possible that a culture's sense of outrage in response to injustice could be diminished if too many people are on drugs that diminish our capacity to feel and empathize with pain and suffering?
Definitely. In the limited time, I've talked for too long, but there was an interesting comment back in the 1970s about, or 60s really, about the hippie, what a better word, in San Francisco, late 60s, from the emerging New Left and Black Panther movement, that it wasn't right that people were going around, you know, high on acid and other things, saying everything's beautiful, because that's exactly what the government of the US wants, for people to be bombed out of their minds, that there's all this injustice going on. So, yeah, I think that is the problem. It anaesthetizes people. That's, I know it's science fiction, what Huxley was trying to get at with SOMAR. Except it was so effective, and it kept people in their places, because obviously you had the combined thing of sort of alphas, which were the top of the tree, I suppose, socioeconomic class one, we'd say over here, through to the unemployed, the epsilons. But yeah, I mean, there's so much that can be raised from this, and it's really lifestyle drugs that are with us, and that's what's running ahead of the genetic manipulation. But it's also a concern about looking at people's genomes and saying, I want someone who's more happy than that. I want someone who's going to be taller. I want someone who's going to be a better athlete.
Well, thank you very much.